Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Gentle Parents Unite weekly podcast with Sujai Johnson and Vivek Patel. We're really happy to be here with you. We love sharing ideas and concepts and strategies to help you with your parenting, creating deeper and more harmonious relationships with your kids. We've both been working with parents for many, many years, and we love bringing our experience and our love for this work to you. So please grab a cup of tea and a paper and pen to make some notes. Sit back and relax with us as we share some ideas around parenting. Thank you so much. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Gentle Parents Unite podcast with Sujai Johnson and Vivek Patel. We're happy to be here with you every week talking about parenting and offering you ideas to make your life easier and your relationships with your kids more harmonious. And I'm happy to be here again for another week with my dear friend and colleague, Sujai Johnson. Hi, Sujai.
Hi, Vivek. I'm doing quite well, thank you. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well too, thanks. Doing my best to manage, you know, difficult situations that we're all facing these days, and trying to keep my family centered and connected, and trying to keep the parents and families I support centered and connected, and just, yeah, it's like constant attention to mental health and details and relationship and communication. It's like turning the dial up to 11. You know, everything's really amplified these days.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. It feels like tensions globally have kind of reached like a peak height, and everybody's feeling tested to the edges of their relationships and their feelings of centeredness and balance, and you know, everything around us is feeling quite difficult at this time. After what is this, 8 or 9 months of lockdown?
Yeah, it's really super challenging.
Yeah, and August has felt really long.
Yeah. I was just telling my wife yesterday that I feel like it's long and short. It feel like it's been dragging on forever, but I can't believe it's already September. It's both at the same time.
Right.
It's very strange.
I saw this recently that was a joke about how 2020 wasn't over yet, but yet March lasted for like 50 years.
And right, you know, right.
I'm really feeling that right now about August. Like August is genuinely, you know, I wake up and I go, oh my goodness, it's still August 2020.
Yeah, it's really something.
Yeah, it really is.
And, you know, I think one of the reasons I value doing this podcast with you every week, Sujai, is because we give parents ideas and strategies and concepts and tips and tricks to help make their parenting life easier, to help them become more connected and have a more harmonious relationships with their kids. And it's something I really value because, you know, my relationship with my kid is just so wonderful. I love my relationship with her. She's 23 and from the very beginning, so 23, she was born in 1997, which is a long time ago. And so 23 years ago, the mainstream parenting paradigm was everywhere. And there was no Facebook, so I didn't have an online community to go to. And yet I knew way back then that I wanted to treat her differently than how I saw all of my friends treating their kids, differently than how I certainly was treated as a kid for the most part. And how all everybody my age was treated. I wanted to do something different. I wanted to treat her with an uncommon amount of respect, an uncommon amount of kindness and collaboration. Collaboration meaning really connecting to her as a human from the very beginning, really valuing her feelings and her perspective and her needs and her values equal to mine, and working with her to find ways to make us all feel like we're really cared for in the home. And I know that can sound obvious. At the same time, it's not how the mainstream parenting concepts work. Those are built on controlling behavior and making kids behave in a certain way and making kids do what you want and not talk back and be polite. And I say polite in quotes. The reason I put it in quotes is because it means act polite how we normally means act in a certain way around adults. And certain things you're allowed to say and certain things you're not allowed to say. But polite isn't really about relationship and isn't really about you know, caring about the other person's experience. And that's the kind of politeness I care about, is politeness that's based on actually caring about the other person's experience, not being afraid of being rude or doing something wrong. And that whole idea of being afraid of doing something wrong is so problematic for me, you know. Just the other day I was thinking of making a post, which I'm still going to do, that asks the question, says, if somebody were to ask your kid, what could you do to get in trouble with your parents? And if they can come up with an answer, you need to change your parenting. Because my kid couldn't answer that. My kid would be like, there's nothing I could do that would get me in trouble. Because the concept of trouble implies I'm an authority figure that can tell her what to do, and I can tell her she's wrong, and I know better, which in some things I do, but in some things she does. We're partners in the whole thing, you know, and that relationship based on control and fear, it degrades, and we lose our connection with our kids, you know, and it happens all the time.
Yes, and I think that a lot of the relational tools that we're taught through those fear-based relationships really sets the scene for the way that we interact in all of our relationships throughout a lifetime.
So true. Yeah, so true. And in releasing control and deciding to work more in collaboration is challenging for sure, because all of a sudden when we take away control and punishments and consequences and trying to get them to do what we want with rewards and praise, we take those things away. It feels like we have no influence over our kids left, because that's the only, like you said, that's the only influence we've been taught, right? There is a deeper influence. The collaborative influence, the relational influence is much deeper. It's a relationship that's not based on trying to make your kids do what you want them to do. It's a relationship that's based on them wanting to cooperate with you because they care about your relationship and they value it. And they care about the house and they value it, and they care about the family community and they value it. And that's a whole different way of thinking about the whole parenting structure in general, you know, is to create a relationship and an environment that's conducive to kids wanting to be part of that, wanting to be part of the solution.
Interestingly, I find that a lot of that ties into the way we relate with this word respect and what that word respect means to us. Respect, as per the dictionary definition, is a very deep admiration for someone or something. And when we're operating from that definition of respect, as opposed to the societal definition of respect that's very much tied into authority and do as I say and, you know, respect my power over you, as opposed to respect in this deep admiration of someone or something that you truly admire in a way that you're upholding it with the utmost care and respect. And right. The way that we interact with that word and the way that we define that word and the way that it dawned on me when you were talking about, you know, that deep care for the community and the family unit and all of that stuff. And so much of it is tied into the way that we interact with the idea of respect, and partially the fact that not only do we interact with the idea of respect in this different way, but we also interact with it, this idea that, you know, our children deserve that respect just as deeply as any adult has ever earned or, you know, gained the respect through their age or whatever ideas we have tied into that. We truly believe, you and I, and you know, a lot of people that are practicing this gentle parenting, we feel that our children deserve that basic respect right from the get-go as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's deserved by the fact of being a living, conscious, sentient human, not because of anything they do or don't do.
It's a basic human right.
Yeah.
treated with simple respect, meaning that, you know, we don't oppress or take away or harm this, you know, wonderful, beautiful being that has entrusted its safety and its life to us.
Yeah. And what happens is, when we have the, I would say, version of respect that's not based on deep human relationship and deep admiration, like you said, it becomes a relationship based on fear. It becomes a relationship based on pain. I know we don't necessarily think of it that way, but our kids generally are watching their parents for what they're going to get in trouble with and what they're not, what they're allowed to do and what they're not, how much they can get away with and what they're not. And this whole idea of get away with, this whole idea of managing that system of what punishments they can take, and which, I mean, at some point kids say, go ahead and punish me, I'm still going to do what I want. And then we have to like shift our, and this happens to parents all the time. Suddenly they have to shift, either they have to increase the intensity of their punishments, which doesn't feel good to anybody, or they have to shift their whole perspective and try and figure something else. And then they're scrambling to figure that out, which is like a third of the people we help are in that position anyways, you know? Right.
Before we move on too much, I want to recommend very highly, and I very rarely recommend like outside materials, but I very highly recommend, it's a documentary. I believe you can find it on YouTube. You might have to pay for it on Amazon or Netflix, but it's absolutely worth it for unpacking those power paradigm ideas around respect. It's called The Mask You Live In. And it's very much about how we socialize young boys and men into this very violent idea of what the word respect means. And it's very eye-opening for anybody really diving into this work and wanting to get, you know, a bigger picture on a lot of things as far as the social influences and a lot of the things we talk about around autonomy and respect and all of it. This is an incredible documentary about the way that we're socializing young boys into this culture. And it can really help us as parents to unpack that and make some shifts around the way that we're parenting so that we're changing the perception around the expectations of young boys and men so that they're able to be more loving, caring, compassionate, and feeling human beings. So,
yeah, it's a pretty prevalent message. You know, I certainly got that message growing up and had to spend a long time reawakening my relationship with my feelings, going deep inside and learning to accept the softer parts of myself as strength and powerful and not be afraid of them. And so that's a process that I love to talk about with, you know, anyone identifying as male and their experience. And and that whole thing about having those expectations, you know, the gender expectations are really, really painful and limiting. It's different when you have the freedom to really discover and express yourself and find out who you are, you know, but that's not something a lot of kids really get. So I agree with you 100% on that one. So being able to shift this relationship based on fear to a relationship based on collaboration and respect and deeply working together and deeply seeing each other, that transition is really challenging. And there's lots of different things that you can do to help with the transition. And when I say transition, all of us are in that transition in one way or another. Because even for me, I had already decided before my kid was born, I was not going to punish her. I was not going to hold authority over her and all that kind of stuff. But to actually implement that, I mean, I'm still working to implement that. Like, it's a lifelong process of undoing a lot of old knots that have been tied really firmly in my brain, knots of thinking and feeling, and changing the lens that I see things through. And all, it's a huge work, and it's a huge area of study. One of the things that really helps in making the shift with our kids is to pay attention to small details. a lot of the time we pay attention to big things and we forget the small things. But it's a lot of the small things, the small moments in life, when they add up, they actually create the layers of our relational patterns, of our communication patterns, of our reaction patterns, all the different feeling patterns, the patterns of how we see ourselves and our own self-image, the way that we relate to things like taking care of the house and managing money, and all of these things are deeply affected by the small moments of life, the everyday moments of life, because they add up and there's so many of them. They happen all the time. That's why they're called everyday moments. And what happens is the layers get built up with almost without us even knowing it's happening. And suddenly we have all these things happening in our lives, all these relational things, and we don't know why they're not listening and why they're arguing and why is this happening. But the building has been happening a long time. I mean, there's other causes too, but those ones we don't really have much control over. I'm just looking at what we have influence over.
Those are what I call the relational biases that we bring into a situation. And we have them with all of the people who are closest to us in our lives that we've been building relationships with consciously or subconsciously, as long as we've known them. We carry around a lot of relational biases that carry either for us, on a subconscious level, they carry either, positive or negative connotations. And we're often reacting to those relational biases more than we're reacting to the relationship that we have with a person. Mm-hmm. Or to the moment, we're reacting to the relationship that we have with the person, as opposed to reacting to what's happening right in the moment, because we're reacting to those relational biases.
Right. And if we set up...
perceive might be happening based on
start that sentence again, Sujay, because I interrupted.
The things that we perceive may be happening based on those relational biases,
right,
as opposed to what may be really happening in the actual moment.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that rewriting those biases so that they're conscious rather than unconscious, and that they align with our values rather than imposed upon us by people that probably had very different values, or maybe hadn't even examined their own values. It's a powerful work, and that's, I think, one of the things that we're doing, and it's certainly one of the things that you and I are really, really, I would say, effective in helping people with, especially yes. in our paid membership, Gentle Parents Unite memberships space, which you can find by going to gentleparentsunite.com. And if you want to join us there, and we really help people work through their relational biases, especially with their kids, because when you can see your kids fresh and alive in the moment, no matter what's happening, and see beneath the surface, it makes a huge difference in our capacity to deal with them in when difficult things happen. And that whole idea of working with the small moments, my acronym for that, and it's one of my favorite acronyms that I've created, is SMABO. And it stands for Small Moments Affect Big Ones. And it's really every moment affects every other moment, but that's not as catchy as saying. And small moments affect big ones is, it means all the little moments that we just kind of live life, they, like we said, they build those things up. And then when a big moment happens, the patterns are already set, but we don't know it. And then they take effect. If we, however, use the small moments consciously and build layers intentionally, build patterns intentionally so that they have, the patterns are stable and resilient and are effective and cover, the complexity of human relationships and human existence, which is hard to do, but it's doable because that's what we're doing. When we do that and we pay attention to those small moments, it greatly affects the patterns that come out in the big moments. That's why I love SMABO. Small moments affect big ones. And I actually have parents, we have parents who made posters that say SMABO, and they put them up around their house so they can remember to pay attention to every small moment. So the particular SMABO that I want to focus on today is a phrase that a lot of parents use to get their kids to do things that they want them to do. And it's actually, you and I were trying to come up with the name earlier today. I was saying, should I call it if then, or shall I call it when then? And then you say, call it if when then. And I really like that. And the idea behind if when then is it is a way that we try and control our kids by using what they want to do, or the fear of what they don't want to do, or missing out on what they want to do, to try and get them to do what we want them to do. There was a lot of doo-doos in that whole sentence. And so the thing is, the example is, if you want to go to the park, you have to finish your homework. Or it might be, you're not going to get a story until you brush your, if you don't brush your teeth. And you can see it's like, there's all of these ways that we make giving something to our kids conditional. Or, you know, if you don't, if you're not nice to your sister this week, I'm not going to take you to the movie on Saturday. Right. It seems like what we're doing is we're just trying to help them understand the order of things. And there's all sorts of ways of wording it, but inside what it creates is it creates a tension and a fear. It means all of a sudden that we're not trustable, that we could use the power that we have to cause them harm intentionally to try and get them to do what we want them to do. And then it's really hard to open your heart to someone like that. It's really hard because, it's again, like I said before, it's a relationship based on fear. And when we have a relationship based on fear instead of one of empathy and connection, understanding and collaboration, well, you can see where that goes. And it goes pretty predictably. I mean, the rebellious teenager that rolls their eyes and mouths off to their parents is pretty common. That's a pretty common story. It's almost so common that you have psychologists saying, oh, yeah, this is how it's supposed to be. But it's not. I mean, yes, teens have a certain kind of rebellion that they do because they're figuring life out. It doesn't mean you have to be the thing they rebel against. You don't have to be an authority figure in their life to rebel against. You can I always considered myself my daughter's partner in her rebellion, so that she knew I understood the need to push back against authority, and she knew I supported it and respected it, and that I could guide her in how to think about it. I could guide her to do it in a way that really got the needs met. Because when kids are doing that, they're trying to get certain needs met, autonomy needs met, belonging needs met. They're trying to get needs met. And if we can help them learn to get their needs met in ways that are healthy and effective and elegant, you know, and enjoyable, it can make a huge difference. So we want to be trustable. We want to be trustable that they'll let us guide them like that. And if you do this, then you'll get that. Or if you don't do this, then you won't get that. Or when you do this, then you'll get that. Or, you know, that whole structure of control, it really makes it very difficult for kids to be open and trusting with us.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, this language, it often sets us up for kind of a power struggle, because it's very much kind of a, you know, even if it's a firm boundary, it's still, when we put it out there this way, we're not going to do this unless you do that. When you put it out there that way, all they're hearing is this, we're not gonna do this. And so it sets them up for this whole power struggle to push back against it and to feel unheard and unseen. And really, at the core, if it is a firm boundary that we have that something needs to get done, we can still put that boundary out there without the ultimatum, which is essentially what it is an ultimatum, right? You know, until this gets done, that's not going to happen. You won't watch TV until you finish your homework. You know, if we can shift away from this ultimatum, and I get that it's like a very innate relational tool. We were given this relational tool as a child, and it really carries on with us as one of our greatest, or not greatest, I should say. That's definitely not the word for it. One of our most used relational tools. And I notice it even in adult relationships where, you know, instead of just as a family, we're going to clean the house, you'll have somebody say, you know, if you do the dishes, then I'll take out the trash. And if you do the vacuuming, then I'll do this. And instead of just, you know, hey, it's time to clean the house, and as a family, we jump up and we clean the house. And clearly within that, you know, everyone has a job. And we might even want to discuss whose job is what. But the way that we frame that language is so important. Instead of saying, if you take out the garbage, I'll do the dishes, be like, hey, you want to take out the garbage and I can do the dishes, or do you want to do the dishes and I can take out the garbage, or, you know, which job is yours and which job is mine, or do you want to do the dishes together? Because actually that's a job that we could share quite well and it might be very connective. And, you know, so we might want to discuss that, but it doesn't have to be this if, or you do, you know, so that I can do, because if we don't have this power struggle around who's what, then all of this stuff, it just exists and we figure out how to work through it together. And that's so important for moving into relationships that don't feel like they're constantly full of power struggles and full of that pushback that we get. You know, I want to acknowledge that not everybody is demand avoidant, but quite a few people you know, they feel demand avoidant. And as soon as we put a demand out there in a certain way, or we put something out with that ultimatum or that final really hard boundary, then people tend to push back against that to test the waters and to understand, you know, exactly how deep that boundary is, and because they want to define their own autonomy around this thing, and, you know, all of the reasons why these, why people feel they need to push back against that language.
I just want to add something, Sujai. Marshall Rosenberg says that when anyone does something out of obligation, guilt, or demand, everybody loses. Everybody suffers, not just the person who's doing it, but everybody, even if the person who seems like they're getting what they want, they're suffering too. And they're suffering because they're not engaging in deep, authentic, vulnerable human connection, which is the thing that, that sense of belonging is the thing that nourishes us the most. And any coercion, any hierarchy, any demand, it takes that away.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say who Marshall Rosenberg is? Marshall Rosenberg is the creator of nonviolent communication, who I think is quite brilliant and love 90% of what he teaches. The only time I question Marshall is, honestly, the only time I really question him is when he starts talking about kids. It's this amazing, I don't know, did I mention this on the last podcast? It's this amazing thing to me that happens when people who teach really, really evolved communication things or emotional processing things, if they're not actually regular parent educators, like you and I do this all the time, a lot of the time what happens is as soon as they start talking about kids, there's something changes in their mind, in their eyes, in their tone, in their shift, the shift, and all of a sudden there's a certain amount of coercion that's perfectly okay. A certain amount of shame and control and authority that's okay. Even for Marshall Rosenberg, he goes on and on about it. I remember I was listening to this this lecture of his, and he's going on about what he calls protective use of force. And protective use of, his first example was grabbing a kid and pulling them back from the, from getting hit by a car. He said, it's protective use of force. But then he started saying, not letting them watch TV is also protective use of force. And then he started going into all these other areas of limiting kids coercively. And he just completely used that phrase to give him permission to coerce and control kids. But in every circumstance, he was saying never do that. It was just amazing.
And interestingly, I wouldn't consider pulling a person out of the street protective use of force. I would more consider that you know, instinct. And there was a couple years back, my nephew had tripped, and we were out at the beach, and my nephew had tripped and fallen on this fire, and you know, I wasn't protectively being forceful. I mean, I was being protective and I was being forceful, and I picked that child up and I threw him down the beach to make sure he was out, like he fire, and you know, and there was no feeling of like he looked up at me and he said thank you,
there was
no feeling that there was any aggression,
had that been
my brother or, you know, my parent or anybody, I would have very much reacted in the same way, and much, you know, an elderly person stepping into the street or somebody who might be looking at their phone and not paying attention, I might use a lot of force and might be very protective of that person. But I wouldn't say that it's, you know, it's not coming from this place where suddenly I have power over them.
Right.
It's coming from a place where I see a disaster coming and I'm moved into fight or flight and suddenly found a way to keep that person safe. If it means I have to fly across, you know, a lane of traffic to keep the small child from wandering into the street, or
right
an elderly person, it's much about the mindset around that, I think.
Yeah.
So much, you know, of course we're going to keep people from running into the street, and sometimes that might not look very pretty. It might look pretty rough and gruff and intense because that car's coming really fast. You know, and but that doesn't justify some kind of, it's not a power over somebody. That's a reaction. Keep somebody safe. And it doesn't matter their age or their cognitive abilities or anything in that moment. You're not even thinking about that stuff because you've already kicked into releasing the adrenaline and you're in fight or flight mode, ready to go and rescue. You know, and so I think so much of the mindset around that particular thing about kids running into the road and how parents sometimes really have to exert power and force and they use that example. And I feel like it really falls off base for what's really going on in that moment.
Right. Right. I agree 100%. That's a really great analysis. I appreciate that. I think it's so important to separate those two things out because the corollary is, you know, what do? We have to make sure the kid never runs in the street again. So then we tell them that, you know, like from one version, we might yell at them, or another version, we might take away something to try and get them to do it. Or we might warn them the next time you do it, if you run into the street again, you're not going to get to play in the park because I can't trust you. And then this whole power play self-esteem thing comes up. Or, you know, it could even go as far as parents saying, well, I have to spank my kids because I have to keep them safe. How else am I going to keep them from running to the road? And I can't tell you the number of times I've heard that reasoning behind spanking kids. So, you know, being...
Yes, me too.
Yeah, for sure. And being firm, that's why, for me, that's why one of the things that I consider really important in the conscious, like living as a conscious person and doing gentle parenting, is to operate from principles, priorities, and values that I value, that I consider important, that I consider, you know, like the essence of who I am as a person. And then when I really understand those things, they don't waver when life gets difficult. That's the idea. And if I do find them wavering, maybe I need to look more closely at what my values really are and affirm them deeper. And so that what I mean is, when life gets difficult and I don't know how to do something, I don't automatically resort to punishing and trying to control my kid. What I do is I recognize I'm being challenged to stay in my values and try and make my life work, which is, I think, a lot of life is that. It's taking this difficult life that we've been given in this world that's very challenging, and to be able to live in it in a way that we align with our values, our deep values of who we are, the kind of people we want to be, the values that we hold, the relationships that we want, the kind of world we want to contribute to. I call these the self-reflective questions, you know, and these self-reflective questions, when we ask them and we start to live by them, that's when we become solid in ourselves. That's when we say, look, I recognize that I want a real human relationship with my kid. I do not want a relationship as if I'm their boss. I do not want a relationship as if I'm a cop. I do not want a relationship as if I'm a judge. I want a relationship as if we're humans, we're friends, and we're you know, I talk about the three parenting relationships are the relationship of model, guide, and friend. The model and the guide are kind of how we teach them and guide them and show them how the world works. And the friend aspect is the human relationship where we really see each other and we really really trust each other, and we build that intimacy. And all three of them are mutual. So like the model, my child models for me as much as I model for them. You know, when I'm with children, I'm very keenly watching them because they're always learning and they're so curious and they're in this like kind of chaotic state of figuring out how the body and the mind and the emotions and social cues work. And so it's fascinating watching how they engage with the world. They're so present and they don't have the layers of judgment we do, and they're play and the way they play and imagine things. Like, there's so much to learn from kids, right? So like when I'm around kids, I'm hyper learning from them all the time and they feel it from me. So one of the reasons kids love me is they feel as soon as I'm with them, I'm learning from them. They're like, geez, this guy's really learning from me. I like it. And so there, that's mutual. And then that's the modeling, right? And then the guide, same thing. Ever since my daughter was born, really, even though she couldn't talk, I would ask her advice for things. And I did that in the beginning to make it relational. But all the way, as soon as she could engage with me, I was asking for her advice. And if I didn't think it would kill everybody, I would take it. And so that she would really feel it, you know? And so there's this whole other level of relationship available to parents with their kids once the if then when then is taken out of the relationship, and those kind of things, all the things that are of that flavor, when they're taken out of the relationship and replaced with solid communication patterns and collaboration patterns and validation and all the kind of stuff that we teach, which we have five seasons of podcast, four complete seasons of podcasts that you can listen to get all of that information. You can join, like, there's so much, right? And like, I myself have made close to 100 parenting videos. If I include the ones that are for members only and the ones that are, I have like 60 on my YouTube and about 40 that are for members only, in our membership parenting space myself, and I've written about 500 pieces on parenting. Like, there's a lot of information out there just from the content I've created to understand how to do that. How to change the way that you relate to your kids so that they're not learning. Because what happens is they learn manipulation from us too, right?
Right.
We wonder, that's part of the layers, is they're learning that manipulation from us.
You know, one thing that occurs to me while I'm listening to you talk is that one thing, you know, on the specific topic of, let's say, like, you know, the child is running into the road and parents might ask, well, you know, what do I do instead? You know, how do I keep my child out of the road? What do I do instead of yelling or spanking or a consequence? And I think that that's a really good question that can be pretty easily answered. So I want to just kind of throw that out there for our listeners. And the first question that I would ask you, is your child cognitively able to pay attention to that road and understand that road provides, you know, a lot of dangers and that it's not a safe place for them to be? And if the answer to that question is no, then I really encourage you to dig into your toolbox to find ways to keep the child away from the road, whether that's, you know, whether you're using a leash or whether you're trying to frequent places that it's, you know, there's a fence and there's no way for him to get to the road, whether it means being completely aware and paying attention before your child, regardless of age, leaning into their own development before your child is able to stay away from the road. The onus and the responsibility of keeping that child safe and out of the road is 100% falls on the caregivers. And as the child gets older and they have that cognitive ability, then really just getting down on their level and bringing them into the surroundings, showing them the road, the sidewalk, the park, showing them the cars coming fast and explaining to them that they're so short that the drivers can't see them, and, you know, that they're going 45 miles an hour, and that, you know, and we don't have to do that with a fear factor. We don't have to be like, and they'll kill you if they hit you. You know, we don't have to add that. We bring them into that surrounding and we show them the safe areas. We show them all these people that are abiding by the safe area guidelines. You know, they see the sidewalks and they see the parks. And so we just bring them into that surrounding and we really pay attention. And until that we're 100% sure that a child knows and understands the lesson as far as that danger zone, then it really falls on us to make sure that we're taking steps and precautions to keep that child safe. And if, you know, it's an ongoing situation, it's not like a road next to the park and you guys go there every once in a while. You know, if it's something that's a danger within your own home or a danger that's, you know, immediately apparent and you're constantly in a power struggle over it, let's say, such as the light sockets. I really encourage people to avoid those power struggles by creating kid-safe environments, because when your child is cognitively able to learn these lessons, they'll get them. And in the meantime, keeping them safe is great for them, and it's also really great for your peace of mind, so you're not spending your whole day navigating the power struggles of keeping your child safe.
Sujai, I want to add another thing about the if then when then thing. Why that one of the other things that it creates a problem for in our lives. And that's when we operate from if then when then. And remember, that means when you finish your homework, then you can go outside and play, right? That kind of thing. When we operate from that perspective, then what happens is, see, I just did when then myself. Then when we operate from that perspective, then what happens is, it's too funny. What happens is we teach our kids to lie to us. They become much more likely to lie to us because they know how the system works. They know if I manage to convince my parents that this got done, I'm going to get this. And they start thinking about how I'm going to get this and I'm going to do this. And it's all about me. Because that's what we tell them. We tell them that it's all about them. We don't tell them, I would love your help because being part of the community means we all help each other. So that that mindset of wanting to help because we're all together, we're all part of the family, goes in direct opposition to forcing someone to help because you have more power. And the two things simply don't work together. So if you want to teach your kid to the value of working to care for the house and care for the environment and care for each other, and you force them to do chores either with rewards or punishments or even disapproval, but they're not doing it because it arises inwardly from their desire to collaborate and to cooperate, then you're actually creating the opposite of what you want. You're creating resentment, you're creating disconnection, which doesn't lead to the cooperation that we're trying to create. And you talk about this all the time, Sujai, about how when we operate from fear perspective, we actually create the opposite of what we want. And so then what you get is kids that are lying to you. They want you to think they cleaned up. So they're going to clean up just enough so that you think they cleaned up. So even if they do clean up, they're trying to do the minimum to get away so they can get what they want. It's so different.
That's when you find everything crammed into a closet or under the bed.
Right. Yeah. And to me, honestly, I find that sad because we're operating against our own interests, you know, both for the kid and for us. Because I think it's reasonable to want cooperation from all the members of the family to keep the family community operating smoothly. I think that's reasonable. And how we get to it is what really matters. And it has not been a non-coercive collaborative path in the past. That's not what we've been taught. We've been taught you have to make your kids do it, give them money for chores, take away privileges if they don't do it, whatever it is. To actually empower kids is different than empowering them to feel that sense of connection and ownership and belonging and joy in the upkeep and the care for the house. So, and for each other. It's a whole different thing. And so if we want to make sure our kids don't lie to us, we have to make telling the truth safe. And this is something that, yeah, I think we should do a whole podcast on telling the truth and lies, honestly, because it's such a deep topic.
Yeah, it is.
But I think that's one of the most important things. If we don't want our kids to lie to us, we have to make telling the truth feel safe. Mm-hmm. All the time, not only when it's convenient for us as parents.
Which turns out, you know, sometimes, you know, our agendas are so big and everything that we have to do, I mean, you know, it feels so important and perhaps it is that important, you know, because we're keeping roofs over heads and keeping everybody fed and all of that stuff, that it's really easy for us to get lost in our own agendas and not really hear or see our children within that infrastructure. And that actually kind of brings me back to when you were talking about Marshall Rosenberg and how he has the whole section about talking about children. And, you know, I think we have so many societal ideas around children. You know, we were introduced to this concept of childism. And I know it's a really hard concept for a lot of people to grasp because particularly in today's culture where it feels like everybody is, you know, so oversensitive and politically correct and all of those things that people are saying. And now we want to introduce this new concept. And yet, you know, I really see where it's coming from because there's such an attitude towards children. And it's actually hard for me to step outside of the spaces where people are consciously doing this work because, you know, I see such intense attitudes towards children that are so painfully violent that I just, it baffles me, you know, to the point where children have zero autonomy, they're disallowed boundaries and, you know, whooping ass and beating the crap out of the little shits and, you know, calling them all kinds of derogatory slurs like crotch goblins. And at the same time, you know, you'll see people who are like, no, you hit them and that's abusive. That's not what you do. You take away all their things and leave them in an empty room. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, children have so little value and voice in our society. And the problem with all of this is that those are the tools that children are learning, that they're growing up with, that they're carrying forward. And all of those tools, you know, beyond being coercive and some of them violent and all a majority of them, you know, very manipulative and removing of autonomy and all of this stuff. And the thing is those are the relational tools that our children are learning that they're going to bring into their adult relationships. And
yeah, we really screw them over in a lot of ways, don't we?
I'm telling you. And, you know, it takes years to unpack that so that we can have a healthy adult relationship. You know, I'm 44 and just now for the first time experiencing a relationship that doesn't have a giant power paradigm and a lot of really unhealthy relational tools on both sides. And
yeah,
really an entirely new mind-blowing experience for me. And I really don't want that to be an entirely new mind-blowing experience for my children at, you know, nearly 50 years old.
Right. Right. I'm so with you, Sujai. I'm so with you. And I think that's one of the reasons that I'm so inspired to do this work with you is because we're having the opportunity to help families work with their kids in a way that they don't get saddled with this kind of baggage, you know, and or at least less so. I don't want to say don't, because trauma is part of life. It happens. You know, my kid is, like I said before, she's 23. She's never been punished by her parents. Never been, I say never, mostly never, you know. The first couple of years were really challenging, but for the most part, our philosophy and our work has always been never to say no to her, never to punish her, never to give her a consequence. We didn't try to get her to do what we wanted her to do with rewards. In fact, when she was 2 years old, I remember as soon as I thought she could understand the concept of obedience, so it was around 2 years old, I said to her, listen, kiddo, there's this thing called obedience. She already didn't know what it meant, but I wanted her to know the concept. I said, there's this thing called obedience where adults think that they can tell you what to do and then you have to do it. And she's looked at me funny, like, really? Adults think that? That was not her experience, right? So this is like, when I tell this story, parents have trouble even comprehending this conversation with a two-year-old. But I said to her, yeah, there's this thing that adults do where they expect you to listen to them and to do what they say, regardless of how you feel about it. And they call that obedience. And she said, "Oh, that's weird." I said, "Yeah, I never want you to do that with me." I said, I never want you to do this obedience thing with me. I always want you to follow your heart. I always want you to listen to your inner wisdom. What I do hope is that you'll take my ideas and my wisdom into account, because I've got like 3 decades on you, and I have your best interest at heart. So I hope you really take what I say seriously. But in the end, I don't want you to obey me. I want you to do what feels right to you." And so I have an experience with my daughter where she's had this deeply connected, supported relationship. And yet her life is full of trauma. She has so much trauma, you know. She has medical trauma. She has relational trauma, not from us. She has stuff at school. She has stuff with friends. She has a lot of stuff that she's working through and working out. She has no shortage of it. What I did was, and I recognized this early, I knew humanity is like that. That's what life is. That's what being human is. What I wanted to do was, I wanted to do everything I could not to be another source of that trauma, both in the big ways that we think of trauma and in the SMABO, the small moments affect big ones, the everyday moment ways that we think of it. You know, that's why I created a relationship with her where she felt that. But the fact is, the only area that we really have control is what comes out of our mouth and what we do with our hands. You know, and like our choices. There's lots of influences that are going to happen with our kids, to our kids, and yet we have. If we go inside and we see ourselves as beings with choices, and if we think about our values, which is something that you're so good at helping people really find their true values and then feel them deep in their bodies and deep in their souls, you know? And then if we can really know ourselves that way, and then engage with our kids from that perspective, it's like a whole different world. And at least with us and our relationship with them, and we get rid of the if then and the when then, they have at least one place in the world where they feel completely accepted and completely safe. Because like I said, if we don't want our kids to lie to us, we have to make it safe to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And parents might ask, you know, around that if then, when then language, what they might, and that was a tongue twister for me. I probably didn't say it right at all. But parents might ask us, you know, what kind of language they might be able to use instead, what it is that they could say instead. Like, let's just say, for example, that you actually really do have a pretty firm boundary around something getting done before we do something else, which personally I found in my relationships, not only with my kids, but in my adult relationships as well. If I let go of these ideas that there's a specific order that things need to be done in, a lot of times the answer flows right out of that. And a specific example of that was one day, you know, my kids are just bouncing off the walls in that proverbial sense, you know, that everybody talks about when they're just like literally climbing the wall and, you know, screaming at the top of their lungs and going through the house like a tornado. And I have it in my mind that, you know, the house needs to get cleaned before we go to the park. Mm. And I'm pretty much doing it myself. And, you know, I'm pretty much doing it myself. And this was several years ago. And I think that at the time I might've been kind of breaking away from that if then, when then relationship. Right. And which was, it came a lot later in my gentle parenting journey, actually, letting go of that language was like letting go of that last little threshold of control. And it was really hard to drop. And I remember this moment so clearly where my kids, you know, they needed to go to the park. That's what they needed. They were like tornado, and I needed the house to get clean, which was very much my agenda. And at some point in this moment, I stopped and I said, you know what? Nothing is getting achieved. I'm getting really frustrated. Let's just go to the park. We went out, We had a wonderful time. We were gone for a couple of hours. We came back to the house and, you know, we walked into a messy house. And my first thought was, oh, my goodness, look at this mess. And so immediately, you know, and everybody was feeling good. The energy was different. And so immediately I just started doing things because, you know, the house was really messy. And the most beautiful thing happened is that my kids, because they were feeling good and happy and rejuvenated and got all this energy from the park and everything, suddenly they were next to me doing this and helping, and it was totally from that intrinsic place. And so if people are able to sometimes step out of their own way and let go of their own agenda, they might be able to find that, you know, what they're seeking is on the other side of this idea. However, a lot of us were not there yet. A lot of times we're just not ready to get out of the way on that one. And that's okay. That's valid too. No, like, this work is about you and you aligning yourself with you.
That's beautiful, Sujai. That whole experience is so beautiful. And you know, that letting go, it's almost like jumping off a cliff at first, you know? And
it is. So if people, you know, if they struggle to get out of the way on that one, because it is, it's like jumping off a cliff and it's really scary, and people think my kids are never going to do that. That's not my kids. That's somebody else's kids. This is like these perfect children in this, you know, some kind of symbolic world where everything's sunshine and rainbows. No, it's really not like that. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
That's not my experience in parenting. It's not been a sunshine and rainbows world, but it's been a very real and human world. Yeah. And, they're not able to get out of their own way and they really want to have this firm boundary that's this, you know, if this doesn't happen, we just can't do that for whatever reason. They really feel strongly about that and they're just not ready to step out of the way. There's a million ways that they can rephrase that into something that's not so, you know, coercive. In the end, it comes off sounding, you know, it's a bit of a manipulation. If you do this, then I'll do that. If we don't do this, then we can't do that. And so when we remove that manipulation, we have a lot of other options. We really do. We have options such as, you know, just giving it up and going to the park anyways. We also, short of that, we have the option to, let's say, you know, you really want the kid to get dressed before you go to the park. And you just have this firm boundary that you're not going to have the kid going to the park in PJs with messy hair. You know, you feel strongly about that and that's totally your place. And I know that, you know, there could even be some privilege in letting your kids go to the park kind of messy. And so, you know, if you have this firm boundary, instead of saying, if you don't get dressed, we're not going to go to the park, we could say, hey, it's time to go to the park. Do you want the blue shorts or the pink shorts? You know, you want your Mickey Mouse shoes? Or, you know, instead of telling, especially with a small child, the smaller they are, and even if they know how to put on their own shoes to get dressed themselves, you know, helping them through the process, helping them get dressed. And particularly if we're running into problems like in an area like with getting dressed, look at the underlying problems. Is your child struggling to get dressed because possibly they have some sensory issues and they feel really uncomfortable when they put on specific clothing? There's lots of sensory friendly clothing lines that can really help revolutionize getting your kids dressed if that's the issue. And, you know, is it just that they don't want to do it alone? Is it that they feel, you know, what is really going on here?
So a lot of the time what they're picking up on is the parents' tension. You know, right away we come into it, it's going to be a problem and we have to go and we have the thing and have to get it done. And if not, and they're going to resist, and you know, they're going to resist because the pattern, the pattern's already set. And we come in with attention.
And the relational biases.
Yeah, and the relational biases,
and
exactly.
We train those relational biases. Yes, and we expect the child to push back in this specific situation.
Yeah. And, you know, I can't count the number of times that I've talked to parents about this kind of thing, and they shifted their attitude, and they come back to me like in shock, Sujai, in absolute mind-blowing shock. They said, Vivek, I didn't change anything. I almost didn't even say anything different. I just changed my mindset and the whole dynamic changed. They started helping. They stopped arguing. I don't understand. I mean, it doesn't happen all the time, but enough that even if it's not happening, the effect is still there. There's a deep effect when we change our mindset.
It's mind-blowingly huge. I cannot say enough for how much changes when we're able to embrace that shift and really move to it. And I do want to continue to acknowledge, though, that it is a slow path for a lot of people.
For sure.
We have to undo and unpack and uncondition before we can really move forward on these paths and feel good and comfortable and self-aligned with it.
Sorry, go ahead.
I mention a lot how important it is when we're doing our work and we're going through shifting our parenting style and everything that we feel really good about what we're doing. You know, I don't want people doing things because you said so, because I said so, because some other parenting expert said so, or because society says so. My greatest goal in all of this work is that parents align with themselves enough that they're doing this stuff because it feels really right and in alignment with themselves.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, another thing that really helps, going back to the strategies that you were talking about, another thing that really helps is to bring fun into the situations. As soon as we get tense, we can completely forget fun exists. Or sometimes we start out with fun, but we're using the fun because we're frustrated and we're trying to manipulate them and that whole thing. And they can sense that right away. But if we go into the short, for example, trying to get them to wear the shorts, if we could say something like, you know, you grab the shorts and you say, these shorts, they're not shorts, it's my cape and I'm Superman. And then you fly around, or, you know, Captain Marvel, and then you fly around the room. Or you say, I bet you could jump off your bed and go straight into your pants and hold the pants out and make it a jumping game, and or tell them they have to wear it on their head for the next 5 minutes before they put it on their butt, and then we're all going to wear our shorts on our head, and that kind of thing. You know, like finding ways that, because the fun not only helps them, it helps us, because we break out of our patterns, we break out of the stress, we break out of that. We end up on a track sometimes and we can't get off it, you know? I mean, I know what that feels like so intimately, where I get on that tension track and I can't get off it and I stress. But play is a wonderful way to get off that. And I actually did a 2-hour workshop entirely devoted to how to deepen your relationship with play and deepen your experience of play with your kids. And that workshop is available in our parenting membership space. And so I want to give a plug for that membership space just now, because we're drawing our podcast to a close. And I'll repeat the URL. It's gentleparentsunite.podia, which is PODIA, which is a wonderful platform that we have, .com, gentleparentsunite.podia.com. And so in our we actually do most of our interacting on Facebook, but we have a private Facebook group just for the members, and you can pay anywhere from $15 up a month. And we have weekly coaching calls, one of which I'm doing tonight, weekly coaching calls and meditations and workshops and classes like I just mentioned. And there's so many resources available to you, and we're building more all the time. And so we would love you to come and join us and work more personally and intimately with us. We also have a free public parenting group, which was founded by Sujai a few years ago, called Gentle Parents Unite. And we have almost 60, if not already, 60,000 members. Probably by the time this comes out, we'll have over 60,000 members in our group. And we would love you to come there as well. That group is really focused on sharing this message. It's just not as intimate and personal as working with us directly in the membership space. But we also have an amazing admin team over there and some really powerful educational units. So that's a really good place to start your journey. And if you want to watch all my, I mentioned I have those 60 videos on YouTube, and I have all those articles that I've written that are mostly on Facebook. And so my social media, where that stuff is Meaningful Ideas. You can search out Meaningful Ideas on YouTube and Meaningful Ideas on Facebook. And Instagram too. I recently had Alanis Morissette share one of my parenting sayings on her Instagram, and I was very excited by that. And so, so if you're not following Alanis, go follow her too, and maybe find that saying that she posted of mine. It was just a few weeks ago, and mm-hmm. And like it and say, "Oh, Vivek's the best."
That's it.
Yeah.
If I got on Instagram, I'd do it.
All right.
Maybe I need to get on Instagram.
Yeah. Do we have a Gentle Parents Unite Instagram? I think we do.
We do. Gentle Parents Unite is on pretty much every platform. We're on Instagram. Mm. We're on Pinterest. We're on Twitter. Really not very much activity happens in any of those spaces.
Right.
Back over on Facebook, a lot is happening. Vivek and I have been talking about making some shifts away from Facebook, but as of yet, that's not a reality. So if that ever becomes a thing, we'll let y'all know.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely talking about shifting how we relate to Facebook. So that for sure is going to happen. It's been wonderful talking to you today, Sujai. I love you so much.
I love you too, Vivek.
Yeah, it's great. I look forward to doing it again next week. And thanks to everybody who listened. Take care, and we will see you all again soon.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'd love for you to find us on social media. You can find our big parenting group, Gentle Parents Unite, on Facebook. And we also have a public page, also called Gentle Parents Unite. Our membership site, where we do more personal, intimate parenting support services and coaching and meditations and different things that we have, all geared towards really supporting parents in a really intense and personal way. You can just type in gentleparentsunite.com and you can find us there. Vivek's articles and videos can be found at Meaningful Ideas. Over 60 videos, and between my blog and my Facebook page, about 500 articles. And we wish you all the best, and we'll see you next week. Thank you so much.